your work life, all of our work lives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Many employees believe they deserve a promotion, and they're frustrated they haven't gotten one. A typical lament: some people who got promoted are much less competent and hardworking than I am. What's a good employee who's been passed over to do? It's tempting to blame not getting promoted on factors beyond your control. For example, your age, race, ethnicity, gender, or physical appearance. And sometimes those are at play, but unless you want to be an activist on the issue, it rarely helps to focus on those. It's usually wiser to start by looking inward and asking yourself, if you were the boss, why might you not promote you? Maybe you're too critical, or you're too much of a milquetoast, conversely. Are you productive enough? Is your work or your contributions in meeting kind of weak? Do you lack a key attribute for promotion, like technical expertise or public speaking ability, emotional intelligence, good attitude, solid work ethic, or reasoning ability, which may not be so easy to improve? If any of those ring a bell, should you upskill? Or should you try to find an employer for whom your existing package of skills and abilities is sufficient for a higher level position? Or should you accept that you are appropriately placed? That's the inward look. But now, if that inward look suggests that you do deserve a promotion, one or more of these ideas might help. First, try to have a champion. It really helps. A colleague who likes and respects you. You might ask him or her, you know, I've been passed over a number of times for promotion, and I'm wondering if you have any idea why. You might get helpful feedback or even learn that someone's sabotaging you, maybe not directly by bad-mouthing you, but by withholding helpful information. Also, you might ask your champion if he or she might tout you to higher-ups. Let's say you don't have a champion. You got to be your own. And even if you do, it can't hurt to do a certain amount of championing yourself as long as you are not appearing unduly self-promoting. So, for example, as this seems appropriate to you, send a draft of work that you're proud of to others for, quote, feedback, or, quote, run into a poobah in the break room. And instead of the usual, you know, how are you? Fine. How are you? Say something like, I'm fine. I'm pleased that my report on X has been used across the organization. Another tip for increasing your chances of getting promoted is to try to get to work with one of your office's stars, you know, one of the power players. For example, you might ask such a person, you know, I've heard some good things about you. By any chance, could you use a little extra help on some project? I got a little extra bandwidth. I'd welcome the opportunity to work with you. That could help you rise on that person's coattails. Another way to increase your chances of getting promoted: perform well at meetings. You got to recognize that meetings are really an opportunity to showcase your ability. So review the agenda items for an upcoming meeting. Could you see yourself saying something valuable? You might even want to practice it in advance so you end up sounding smooth and leaderly, that is, promotable. Another tip for helping to get promoted is if you are indeed running a meeting yourself, you got to realize that many people dislike meetings. Most people recognize that, but they tend to forget it when they're planning their own. So if possible, try to communicate with that group by email rather than calling a meeting. But when a meeting is appropriate, for example, when an issue is time-sensitive and dynamic input, that is, the back and forth in real time, is required, try to minimize the number of attendees. That both conserves employee time and it ensures that the central people get adequate opportunity to participate. And if possible, schedule a meeting right before lunch or before quitting time, so attendees are going to be motivated to be crisp. And if an attendee goes off topic, try to tactfully bring him back. Like, for example, that's an interesting point, and maybe we'll address that later. But let's return to the agenda item. You might even write their point on the whiteboard so they don't feel it was blown off. If an attendee is, let's say, dominating or long-winded, even if it's on topic, again, be crisp. It's appropriate to interrupt, as long as it's usually in a face-saving way. So when the person stops for breath, you might say something like, "A good point," and then you paraphrase it. And let's see what others have to say. So that's a way, you know, if you run those meetings crisply, you are at every meeting, every person who's attending, as well as the people who are grateful not to have been invited, is feeling good about you in that leaderly role. It can really boost your chance of getting promoted. And finally, get good at public speaking. Especially at higher levels of employment, public speaking is critical. So I wrote an article recently in Psychology Today called "Good Public Speaking Without Fear." You might simply Google it. It's free, of course. It might be very helpful. Or you might join Toastmasters. I've heard such great things about Toastmasters. It's a very time-honored, they have a process by which people improve their public speaking, and it's a very supportive environment. And it's a trivial cost, free or very little. So those suggestions, you know, there's no guarantees in life, but those suggestions should at least up your chances of getting promoted, if not within your organization, because sometimes you're just dead-ended. You know, your boss really needs you in your current job, or your boss isn't leaving, and the company is in down, or nonprofit or government agency is in downsizing mode. And so your chance of getting promoted in the organization is not great, even if you follow every suggestion that's good. But with those skills in tow, you certainly maximize your chances of getting promoted outside the organization. Okay, this is a good time for me to give out the phone number for two reasons. One, if you're in a situation where either you think you deserve to get promoted or advanced either within or outside your organization, but you keep getting passed over, and you'd like my little bit of customized advice for you, that's a good reason to call. Or more broadly, if you or someone you care about has a work problem of any sort, whether you're 16 or 76, whether you are blue-collar, white-collar, or no-collar, self-employed, government employee, nonprofit. Like I like to say, it'll be 29 years, October 1st, that I've been on this air. So I've heard a lot, and I've had 5,400 clients. I've heard a lot, and I like to think solved a lot. So the price is certainly right, zero, zippo, nada. For either of those two reasons, want to get some guidance on how to get promoted, or you got any kind of work-related problem, the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko and KALW, 415-841-4134. The time to call really is now, when the lines don't get full and you don't have to spend a lot of time on hold and all the rest of that. So the phone number again, 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting for your calls to come in, there is an under-considered contributor to work life and personal failure, and it's called verbosity. Verbosity meaning talking too much. Have you ever conversed with someone and wished they'd stop talking? We all have. You ever wonder maybe if people wished you'd shut up? Maybe you've even been told you talk too much. Or more likely, you often get interrupted. Or if a person is more polite, their eyes wander, or they shift their body, or their foot, just their foot. Sometimes, you know, it's hard to hide what your foot's doing. You know, it's kind of unconscious. They're kind of seeking an exit strategy. That verbose person is informally described as a chatty Cathy or a Billy Blowhard. And quietly, people are very polite, but internally, they may think of such a person as egotistical, even narcissistic. And if so, as a result, of course, that person suffers a great deal in both their professional and personal life. Verbosity. I'm going to talk about the causes, at least five major causes of verbosity, because like any problem, it usually that's the symptom. There are many causes. And then I'm going to talk about some cures. But first, I'd like to, we're going to go to the phones, but I'd like to give out the phone number again. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, I do what are called workovers here on KALW. Call in. The phone number is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. I guess it's not. I'm incorrect. I thought there was a call on the line. So let me go right to the causes of verbosity. One is you can be verbose because you're trying to clarify your thinking. Many people, including me, can clarify our thoughts by talking it out. And that's fine in therapy. But in conversation, those thoughts, which by definition are unclear, usually bore the listener. it's better to talk aloud while you're alone or write in a journal. I mean, for me, writing articles helps me clarify my thinking. Another cause of verbosity, loquaciousness, volubility, those are relative synonyms, are you're verbose to compensate for insecurity. Talking excessively, either to entertain or to edify, it often backfires. You see, even if you accomplish those goals, if you're talking too much, too long, that usually brands you as a show-off and can make your listeners feel less than, which of course makes them dislike you or even try to exert retribution on you. Another possible cause of verbosity is your desire to help. It can be altruistic. But the problem is that too much help disempowers the other person, kind of like I was saying earlier about compensating for insecurity. I mean, it's fine to tactfully offer a snippet or two, ask questions, but monologues usually hurt you more than they help others. Another cause of verbosity is an inaccurate perception of what interests your conversation partner. I mean, if you're going to make some granular description of your work, it's going to interest only a small percentage of the people who are listening to you. Same is true of recounting your wandering through the King Kamehameha Museum, let alone the dreaded travel slideshow. Those may fascinate you, but usually, as they say, you have to be there. Even stories can be boring. Many people lack the gift of telling stories at the right length, at the right level of detail, and with suspense or humor. And the longer the telling of a story, the greater your burden is as you're telling it. So you've got to really be not interior motivated, but really put yourself in the shoes of the listeners and make some, you know, you're going to guess wrong sometimes, but make some kind of an assessment of what the likelihood of that person being interested in what you're saying. And a final cause of verbosity is to avoid uncomfortable silences. Even if both you and your conversation partner are feeling awkward in a silence, it's better usually to stay quiet than to say something boring. Often the other person is thinking during that silence, may appreciate that time, and is likely to say something more interesting than what you would have said to fill the silence. So, those are some of the causes, just briefly reiterating. One, you're trying to clarify your thinking. Two, to compensate for your insecurity. Three, because you have this desire to help. Four, you have an inaccurate perception of what interests your conversation partner. And five, you're trying to avoid uncomfortable silences. Well, there are a couple of cures for verbosity, loquacity, talkativeness, being a chatty Cathy or a blowhard Billy. Sometimes behavior change precedes attitude change. Your being a big mouth may have been caused by one of those things I just mentioned, but sometimes the fastest way, the most effective way to cure it may simply be to make yourself speak less. Unfortunately, that's easier said than done, so I'm going to offer you these two rules of thumb that should help. Number one, speak 30 to 50% of the time. You see, a conversation contains only so much energy. If you speak much more than half the time, you're sucking up too much of that energy, which dissipates the person's investment in the conversation and in you. It's usually not enough just for me to tell you that, though. You really do need to practice. So you might ask a trusted friend to let you know if he or she perceives you as talking more than half the time. The second cure I want to share for volubility, for verbosity, is something I, of course, said many times on the radio before, but it's so germane to this I need to repeat it. It's to follow the traffic light rule. During your utterance's first 30 seconds, your light is green. The person's listening. During the second 30, your light's yellow. The chances are increasing that the listener thinks you are a Billy Blowhard or Chatty Cathy. Or the person would like to respond with something, as something you've triggered something they want to say, and that person is then struggling to keep that thought in memory as you continue to blab on. And at the 60-second mark, your light's red. Yeah, very occasionally you can go a bit longer. For example, when you're telling an anecdote that clearly is engaging your listener, but almost always, you better shut up or ask a question. If a listener wants more, they can ask, and you'll find that they rarely will. So, to practice that, to practice the traffic light rule, in your next conversation with that trusted friend, set a timer for 30 seconds. And each time you start an utterance, start to say something, start the timer. My verbose clients are usually surprised at how quickly that timer rings. Typical comment they might make, I was just getting started. So, anyway, takeaway, as with most things, in speaking, moderation is wise. Put more effort into listening rather than talking, really listening to what the person is saying, what the person is not saying. That often is very helpful. And the message behind the verbally expressed message. You know, that old saw is kind of true. There's a reason we have two ears and one mouth. So those are some thoughts about an under-considered contributor to work life and personal failure, verbosity. I'll give out the phone number again. If you have a work-related problem of any sort, frankly, the harder the better. I've been doing this a long time. So both for my benefit and I think the listeners, tough questions are good. Whatever your work-related problem, this is a good time to call. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, for what I call a workover. Usually there's no pummeling involved. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I just learned that the U.S. Postal Service is now hiring. We make fun of the post office. We hear about going postal all the time. And maybe my base of knowledge is too limited. But, for example, every mail carrier I've ever had, I like to make conversation with them when I'm available. I work at home in my home office. So when I'm around, when they've got something they want to drop off, I will often ask them, how do you like your job? And I think every single one of them, they may be BSing me, I don't know, but every single one of them says they like the job. Now, not every post office job is a mail carrier, but, it's one of those few jobs, so many of my clients crave security, benefits, full time, vacations, holidays. Well, U.S. government job, Postal Service is a separate entity, but it's certainly within the overall federal aegis. They're hiring right here in the Bay Area. And they're doing it at the Civic Center station, that is the Civic Center Post Office in Oakland, this Sunday, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. They start the registration at 8:30. And it's at 201 13th Street, room 101B, in Oakland. Or you can register in advance, because they're going to conduct interviews on site. You can register at Eventbrite, that's event and then B-R-I-T-E, and just search on the term Oakland Civic Center Station and you'll find it. So I just thought I'd pass that along. Anyway, we've got plenty of calls on the line, but I'll give out the phone number. If you have a work-related problem, the phone number for a workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi, Marty.
Hello.
Thank you very much for what you're doing.
I do my best.
I'm in the lucky position that I've recently gotten a very good job that I love.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, it's related to sex, and I don't know how to discuss it outside of my place of work.
Okay, why don't you tell us about what, is it, are you a sex worker? Are you an exotic dancer, or what's the deal?
So I'm the content manager on a website that does education about methods of sexual pleasure.
Okay. Why is that difficult? I mean, this is, maybe I'm being naive, but mm-hmm. in the year 2018, especially here in the Bay Area, the land really of sexual openness to just about everything, I would think that nobody'd be embarrassed as long as the way in which you present it doesn't imply you're embarrassed. I remember mm-hmm. going to high school with a kid who was in a wheelchair. His name was Sidney Rosenbaum, and he made light of it. He was very comfortable in his wheelchair. He offered to race people, and everybody loved him. There was nobody, and this was back, a few decades ago, and, people were not open to disabilities. And even in that relatively conservative environment, there wasn't the slightest prejudice, at least that I was able to see, or nor did he discern. And so if you wear it proudly, there's nothing wrong with sex. There's a hell of a lot more wrong with violence than there is with sex. Is it a matter of simply being at least matter of fact, if not, overtly proud of it?
Well, I'm actually very proud of it. I was just imagining that, maybe down the road in future job interviews, it might be difficult to find a way to explain well-being appropriate and not making other people uncomfortable.
I wouldn't be prurient in terms of overall detail, but what you just said to me, helping people make love better is not a bad thing. Giving more pleasure, there's no negative side effects. When it's not environmentally dangerous, it's not racist, sexist, homophobic, or anything else. It's a perfectly innocent, helpful activity, more helpful than, for example, companies who sell products that we don't need, you know, that are wasteful and that are a ripoff or poor value for the money. There's so much more to be ashamed of than helping to educate people about how to have sex in a way that's more rewarding for both parties. I mean, and I'm not some wild leftist. It's not like I'm some, you know, it just feels from a cosmic justice point of view, it's one of the more honorable professions. Do you think I'm being too am I just being too politically correct here? Do you agree with me?
Well, you're the expert, but what I deal with in my day-to-day work is stuff that's not safe for work. And so, just with mixed company, I hear the words that are coming out of my mouth, and I'm wondering, is this okay to talk about? Because I can't tell anymore, because I deal with it.
It depends on how much detail. You're not going to say fellatio, you're not going to say cunnilingus, you're not going to say group sex, you're not going to say any of that stuff. But you can say, if you are general and say you are the content manager for a website that helps people have a richer sex life. Some idiot employers are going to reject you for that. But those are people you don't want as friends or employers anyway. I think as long as you are careful to not be unduly prurient, but to state things matter-of-factly and with a measure of quiet pride, I think you're going to get more people liking you and willing to hire you than people who are turned off. And as I said, the people more likely to hire you and befriend you are the people you don't want to befriend you anyway. And the ones that don't, that's an excellent screening mechanism for people who are too suppressed. What do you think?
You have really put my mind at ease. Thank you.
Yeah. But be proud. If somebody rejects you, wear that as a badge of honor. It's like if a Nazi rejected me, I'd be proud of that. Of course, that's an extreme example. But from a cosmic justice, from a purely ethical, philosophical perspective, it is certainly nothing to be ashamed of, and especially given the zeitgeist of our era and the location that we're dealing with, which is San Francisco Bay Area. If you're my sister or my daughter or whatever, I would certainly, there's no shame. I would tell my friends what you do. Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, let's go back. Let me give out the phone number and then we'll go back to the phones. If you got a work-related problem, I thought that was a great call. I loved it because it was fresh, it was different, and I was able to feel, pardon the pun, passionate about it because she's doing nothing wrong, nothing whatsoever. You know, if like any business, if they're overcharging, if they're under-delivering, if, you know, they're lying about, say, we're not going to sell your name to any other mailing list and they sell, that's not the story. But on the face of it, helping people to make love better, whatever that is, he said it was a website with videos. I don't care how explicit. I mean, even if it's porn, as long as some of it's consensual, it doesn't feel, you know, or it's not promoting, bad behavior that is abuse of people. I'm certainly not an advocate of child porn. But, you know, these are, you know, we're long past the puritanical era, in my judgment. And again, I don't speak as some wild guy, you know, I've never even been to Burning Man. and yet it seems to me that she has absolutely nothing to be ashamed of and probably more to be proud of than many other people. Anyway, the phone number, if you have a work-related problem of any sort, like I said, the more unusual or the more difficult, the better. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello.
Hi, Marty.
Hi. Hi, what's on your mind?
Hi, my question has to do with, what do you do if you're in a job and you have filled in for a person who's gone on medical leave and
right.
you've You've assumed their responsibilities.
Right.
And then they die. And you become that job. You become that person's responsibility. You know, you're able to do all their tasks.
Yes.
And then you remain in the interim position for months. Well, that's what's happened to me.
Okay. And so you're trying to become perm rather than a temp, is that correct?
Well, I'm not a temp. I've worked for this company for 3 years now.
Okay.
But a year ago, one of my bosses became sick, was out on medical leave for a long time, and they said, we gotta fill this job. Who are we going to do? So I'm sort of the general purpose lab assistant, and I had the skills, so I stepped in as best as I could.
So what's your concern? I mean, that's fine.
Well, I've said, okay, now we're in a situation where a year later, this person has died, and I want to be no longer the interim lead person.
Sure.
I want to be the permanent lead person, but they say, oh, you're not ready.
Okay, let's be specific. Have they been specific about in what ways you're not deserving to be officially given that position?
No.
Have you asked explicitly for clear feedback? Because, you know, you're shooting blind when you're dealing with, you know, sorry, you're not quite ready. But if you've got a concrete things that you need to work on, you can either blow them off and say, that's BS, that's not really what's going on. Or, you know, maybe it's true that it's fine as an interim, but you really, they're still wondering whether somebody else might be a better manager. Maybe you're not good at motivating people. Maybe you're too error prone. Maybe you have too many absenteeisms. You know, do you have any idea? Either do you have an intuition as to what's keeping you from, what's keeping them from after 3 years, Jesus, you know, and all that time in the interim, do you have an intuition about what you think is keeping them from wanting you to be the official guy, or do you feel you should be asking your boss for specificity?
Well, I should be asking my boss for specificity, but the thing is, up until this person died, they kept saying, well, we can't talk about you moving into this job yet because we don't know if so-and-so is going to come back.
Sure, but that's irrelevant now. The point is...
Right, and that's what I said. Well, now can't we talk about it? And I said, well, no, you'll have to wait till December when your yearly review happens.
Now, is that...
It feels like stalling to me.
Well, it could be. Given that it's we're already at the end of August, and your annual review is coming up in December, is it really just company policy to wait? And would it, you know, is it more ego to be and a little personal insecurity, which I can understand, we can all be insecure. Is it wiser to wait until December, in which case you would not be seen as too pushy, and then they'd be more likely to do it because they've mentioned that as a date? Or do you think it's wise to ask now for specificity? Because maybe even if you ask now, the side benefit is, if there is a deficiency that's making them, to use your term, stall, you have time to work on that and tell them that. So let's say they say, you know, I'm not sure you're really good at being tough enough with the workers who are not showing up on time or making errors. So you can say, you know, really, I'm really glad you told me that. I'm going to really work hard on that between now and December, and that gives you an additional opportunity to improve and therefore increase the chances that when December comes around, you get the promotion. So do you think you should ask now for that specificity or wait until December?
Well, I think you're right. I do think I should have an action plan or some items that hoops I need to jump through or goals to achieve. And then at least I have a yardstick, a rubric I can see that I've made progress, and maybe I am deserving of that promotion.
Exactly, and the term, you know, hoops to jump through implies almost that it's unnecessary. It's like it's a pro forma kind of thing you got to do. But to keep for you to feel better about it, instead of thinking of it as hoops to jump through, think of it as, hey, opportunities to grow, which will help me be a better manager. And not just in this job, but subsequently. So think of it as more as an opportunity to grow than hoops to go through. Does that make sense?
Well, that's more positive, yes.
And it's also more legitimate, it seems. Because otherwise, you know, and it depends what they say. I mean, if they really hate you for some reason that has nothing to do with merit and it's just some garbage, you know, that's another story. But at least you should listen. And then, let's say they say you need to be better at X and Y. Mm-hmm. Do not even if if right now you feel that's BS, do not argue at that point.
Okay.
I want you to leave the room. I want you to go home and meditate on that, whether they're right or wrong, because we all get defensive. I can't tell you the high percentage of my clients who have been let go, who blame everything but themselves.
Yeah.
But then when I probe and really see what was going on, they come to admit that, you know, that's probably true. I have some, quote, room for growth. So don't stab yourself in the, don't shoot yourself in the foot by using that visceral, reflexive, defensive reaction if they say, you know, you really need to get better in A and B. Even if you feel like that's BS, go home. Think about it. Maybe talk to a colleague about it. Talk to a significant other about it. And then, if you think they're dead wrong, maybe you do need to say, you know, gee, I'm a little confused. You say I'm weak at this, but look at my, you know, I feel like I've done this, this, and this. So you can either counter it or decide that, you know, they got a point. And even if they have a marginally good point, not a great point, it gives you something to work on. And so that come December, they feel you're really making the effort to grow. And voila, now you're the permanent guy. I would bet on you if that's the case. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you.
Okay. And again, if you've got a work-related problem, I do love doing this. I really do love trying to help you. I think a lot of my clients, when I ask them, what do you care about? A lot of my clients say, I love helping. I love helping. So I'm happy to help you. You got a work-related problem? Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. You know, the unemployment rate now is at the lowest rate, 3.9%. It's at the lowest in, you know, depending on which statistic you believe, 35, 40, 50 years. No, not quite 50. 35 years. But I read something recently in the Wall Street Journal that surprised me. The article is called How Bad's the Labor Shortage? Well, there are cities that will pay you to move there. For example, there were in the city of Hamilton, Ohio, jobs at the paper mills and the manufacturer of safes, you know, like safes to hide your personal belongings. It's near the Miami River, and they mostly dried up in the early 2000s. And so there were lots of closed factories and an abandoned downtown. And today, the waterfront is all spruced up. There are loft apartments and help wanted signs all over the place. And what's missing are workers. And that prompted the city of Hamilton, Ohio, to try an experiment. They say if you relocate to Hamilton, the city will pay you $5,000 to help pay your student loans. That's not the only place. There's a place called Grant County, Indiana. And you're going to get $5,000 for buying a home if you agree to work there. And if you settle in North Platte, Nebraska, which I must admit I happen to know has got all these beetles there in the summer, but in any case, if you settle in North Platte, Nebraska with a job, the Chamber of Commerce is going to hold a ceremony in your honor and present you an even bigger check than $5,000. Apparently, according to this Wall Street Journal article, in small towns across America, instead of offering incentives to employers, you know, like many cities will offer Amazon zillions of dollars to relocate there, they're giving it to the workers, which is part of why I'm sharing it with you here. There is a guy named Mike Algren. He's an economist at the University of South Dakota. And he calls this financial incentives, quote, a modern-day Homestead Act, which refers to the 1862 law that offered free public land to settlers willing to move west. And that's really what's going on in these cities and in another place called literally in a small town called Marney, M-A-R-N-E, Iowa, where free parcels of land are available to people who work there. It's really quite amazing. Enrico Moretti, who's an economist at UC Berkeley, he said, there is no one in San Francisco trying to pay people to move here. So, you know, many people love living here for one reason or another, if only because of the weather. Not because of the traffic, necessarily, for sure. But, you know, that is an option. I try to cover new options here. You know, now, I think I'll stop there. Yeah. Anyway, that's just a kind of an under-the-radar idea. So I'll go to the phones in a moment. But if you have a work-related problem, work question, I'd like to do workovers on you. I'd love to help. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko and KALW, 415-841. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hi, it's you. Are you there? Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm calling to get some advice from you. I have a small business that I started in San Francisco about 27 years ago. I grow it to 3 locations. It's food business, and it's giving me a good income. It's getting to the point where I am thinking about retiring, mm-hmm. and my options are either selling it, which will give me not enough money so I can rest for the rest of my life, and at the same time, I cannot manage to run the business as I get older. Mm-hmm. So I've got the dilemma of what I should do ahead of me.
The standard approach, and I'm not sure it's your, you know, we're not saying your standard, but I'm curious what your reaction is to the standard approach, which is to find somebody, either within your family or outside, to mentor to take over the business so that you are continuing to make some income from it, which if you think there is, you know, if you think the business is topped out, so if let's say for 27 years ago you were a pioneer and you started one of the first few food trucks, but now there's a food truck under every block or a coffee kiosk under every block, you feel that's done, it's going downhill, no, you want to get rid of it, sell it, and you find something else to do to supplement your income. But if you think there is unrealized potential in the business, it's normally smart to keep it and find somebody else slowly to slowly replace you. It's called a glide path, a succession plan. Do you think you should have should you really sell it because you feel the business is topped out? Or should you find somebody to slowly take over your business little by little as he or she gains the competence to do so?
That's great advice. Thank you so much, Marty. That's a great show. I appreciate it.
It is my pleasure indeed. Again, the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco, if you've got a work-related problem. I love this previous caller because I think small business people often need a lot of guidance. And, you know, that also explains the popularity of the show Shark Tank, in which people come in with their ideas for businesses and these quite sophisticated sharks try to poke holes. So you want to play Shark Tank with me? I'm a little kinder than certainly that Kevin O'Leary guy, but not a milquetoast either. So if you've got a business idea you want to run by me, or a story, you know, we all have our story. Our work story is very interesting to all of us. There are lessons embedded. So lots of reasons to call. You got a work-related problem, I'll do a workover on you, try to help. If you got a small business idea, I'll play Shark Tank with you. You got a work-related story that you want to talk about that you think is interesting and might be of value to our listeners, those are all good reasons to call. Work with Marty and Emco and KALW. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. In my endless efforts to try to keep things fresh, I've written some poems lately that relate to work, and I wanted to share a few of them with you. The first one is called The Hoop Test. I've played basketball my whole life. In the street with no refs, the courts, that is the basketball court, is a good test of a person when pressed. Does he or she try, but not fry, that is not ply, try too hard, not get too intense, share, but not when on a tear, meaning going constantly hitting the shot after shot, sometimes people are hot and then you don't want to keep sharing, praise, not raz, those people who are always bad-mouthing the opponents or whatever, that says a lot about the person, scorekeep, not jazz, in other words, keep the score and not make up scores and cheat, and lose and win without spaz, without spazzing out. For whatever job I was hiring, I'd less be relying on resume, letters, all the rest, than on my little hoop test. Now I'll read it again without the explanatory comments. The hoop test. In the street with no refs, the court's a good test of a person when pressed. Does he or she try but not fry? Share but not when on a tear? Praise not raz? Scorekeep not jazz? Lose and win without spaz? For whatever job I was hiring, I'd less be relying on resume, letters, all the rest, than on my little hoop test. Next poem I wanted to share with you is called Financial Expert. Sign right here. I'll do you right. Take your money and give it flight. But are you sure? I've worked so hard. I fear like others, you'll make it lard.
Fear not, my chickadee, I've solved the mystery. So trust me now, don't have a cow, just sign right here.
But as time went on, the money was gone, and so was the financial expert. That's a career that, unfortunately, people who tend to go into financial services careers tend to be too money-oriented, and some are, of course, extremely ethical. I'm certainly not tarring the entire industry, but you really need to be careful. I do recall a situation where my wife had worked for the State Department of Education, and one of her colleagues, high-level guy, had said, you know, all of us are going and investing in this guy. He's made incredible returns. And so Barbara and I went dutifully to this guy, but there was something that felt a little sleazy. He had this slick brochure, and he was just a small office, kind of in a not high rent area or whatever. And he didn't seem that smart. I said, let's pass. And Barbara ended up finding out that 2 or 3 years later, it was a Ponzi scheme. That the first year or two, they sent big checks to get more so that the word of mouth spread. But then when he got enough clients, he simply ran away with everybody's money. You know, it really is smart in the area of finances to keep your money with one of the real big boys that are less likely to run away with your money. I've talked a lot about Vanguard, tying it to work. You know, you often in many large organizations, for-profit and non-profit, can invest your retire your 401k, your 403b, or your 457 in any of a number of options. But the big companies, especially Vanguard, which has the lowest fees, you know, they're not going to run away with your money. Nor is Fidelity, nor is Charles Schwab. Wanted to share that about one career called Financial Expert and also share its implications for you. Another poem. Give out the phone number again. If you've got a work-related problem, you can call. The phone number I'll try to help you is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. That's the number here at KALW for a free workover. That's what we do every Thursday night. It's my pro bono work. Happy to do it for you. 415-841-4134. Another poem is called True Hope Doesn't Come from Velveeta. Remember Velveeta, that horrible plasticky processed cheese? To move forward, some shrinks insist that first the past must be processed and processed and reprocessed more than Velveeta. But I'm here to tell you, from 5K career counselees and my own memories, that better to suppress than express, wise to be the king of denial. Confidentiality precludes my telling others' tale, but mine I can unveil. Born to immigrants new, in Bronx tenement too, under the L train roaring 24/7, parents no English, no schooling, no car, only Holocaust torture's scar, and blue-collar them, to tame hyperactive me, whipped me with thick belts, daily leaving me tall welts. Yet today, just Google me, plus beyond what you can see, I'm a pretty contented guy. And exception I'm not. For many a child of survivors, and I've known a lot, their story's the same as I've got. You see, therapy often merely strengthens, like pumped muscle, memories of pain. The better answer often is to disdain shrinks guilt trips for perhaps dollar gain. Better to suppress and take the next step. As my dad said, the Nazis took 5 years. I won't give them 1 minute more. Martin, never look back. Always take the next step for. Okay, he said forward. Even if at the end of your rope, perhaps my dad's words of hope may yield an easier slope than yet another grope at the Velveeta. So that's True Hope Comes from Velveeta. I'd like to give out, if you have a work-related problem, my main job here at KALW is to help you. So whatever your age, whether it's a problem or a story you want to share, or a business idea or a business you're running that isn't doing so well, or you simply want to take it to the next level. I also have a lot of clients who are, you know, well-employed, but they're still unhappy for one reason or another, directly or indirectly related to their career. Those are all good reasons to call KLW and work with Marty Nemko for a workover. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. The next poem I want to read to you is called The Fundraiser. More lauded, you know, more praised, more lauded than my mirror, meaning the mirror of a fundraiser, more lauded than my mirror salesman, fundraiser is viewed far nobler. But truth to tell, to expect to do well, we must sell and sell and sell and sell and then sell. So tricks we must master to lift money from marks we hit faster, and puff up causes to their point bursting, to tease, to rest, that is W-R-E-S-T, to rest, to ring, W-R-A-N-G, cash now and when the reaper rings. The task never ends, because greediness ne'er does too. Ever nonprofits, even nonprofits, are human. So the quota climbs ever by two. I'll read that again without the interspersed comments. The fundraiser. More lauded than my mirror salesman, fundraiser is viewed far nobler. But truth to tell, to expect to do well, we must sell and sell, and sell and sell, and then sell. So, tricks we must master to lift money from marks we hit faster, and puff up causes to their point bursting, to tease, to rest, to ring cash now, and when the reaper rings. The task never ends, because greediness ne'er does too. Even nonprofits are human, so the quota climbs ever by two. Let's see, is there any more? I think one more poem I'm going to read and give out the phone number again if you've got a work-related problem. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko and KALW, 415-841-4134. The last poem I want to read, I think it's the last one, yeah, is called Workaholic? No, Heroic. The hard worker, they pathologize. Workaholic, like alcoholic. No, heroic. While the work-life balanced types count hour 38, hour 39, done, the heroic count hour 58, hour 59. I have more hours in me to heal, to anneal, to build, to rebuild, to invent, to augment. Don't pathologize hard workers as alcoholic. More accurate, heroic. Those are some of my work-related poems. Now I want to share with you some side hustles. In previous weeks, I shared some side hustles. These days, unfortunately, there are many people who treat what has traditionally been side hustles as their main hustle, and that's why I'm always so I view askance the low unemployment rate, because it includes all kinds of people who may have made good money in the past and are now working part-time temps on, and including in these side hustles, as well as, of course, many people who have given up looking for work, because you're only counted as unemployed if you, you know, demonstrate that you've been looking for work that week. So in any case, I've talked about some side hustles before. I'll read some of those without explanation first. Certainly a bartender or a barback, being a bouncer, catering assistant, a proofreader, including for Create Space Books, being a busker, that is a street performer, tour guide, and election day worker. But I've got a number of others that I wanted to share with you now. One is I've had a number of my clients who keep afloat by they have a part-time job, but they take this side hustle. They rent a room, either permanently or on Airbnb. I have a number of clients who make $10,000-$12,000 a year And sometimes renting that room out, especially for Airbnb, where you're getting a number of people over the course of a year, it's a great networking opportunity for both personal and professional. So that's a particularly interesting side hustle. At least many of my clients have found that. Here's an unusual one. Every public library, most public libraries, hold a book sale for books that they don't want to put on their shelves, and they sell them for very deep discounted prices. But at the end of the sale, there's usually maybe hundreds, maybe thousands of books that didn't sell at all, which they're going to toss out. And there are, as a side hustle, see if you can get those, all of them, for free or a trivial amount, and then sell them on eBay or Amazon for what is, you know, fair market value for that kind of a used book. And that's a way to make real good money if you're somebody who, you know, wants to, can't stand the long commute that we're suffering here in the Bay Area, and you want to work from home and you like working for yourself, or maybe, you know, you're a parent who wants to work at home, not just because of the commute, because maybe you've got childcare issues or elder parent issues, you're living with your elder parent, or you've got mobility issues yourself. That's the kind of home-based business that you can do, and potentially, I don't know, but I certainly see that there is a hell of a lot of vendors who are selling used books on eBay and on Amazon, and clearly making money for them. You know, I imagine they're getting the books for free or next to nothing. And I've bought many used books for, you know, $5, $10, $15, sometimes $20. If the book has a list price of $35 and I can get it used for $18 or $20, I do it. So that's an interesting side hustle. We'll give out the phone number one last time. If you've got a work-related problem, this is your last chance. I don't bite. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco. If you want some help with your work life, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Another side hustle is working for Trader Joe's. I live pretty much equidistant from Trader Joe's and Safeway. I live in the Rockridge area of Oakland. And my first choice is always Trader Joe's. And when I'm necessary, I go to Safeway. But I'm chatty. And so when I'm talking with the cashiers at both places, and I also try to be observant, the workers at Trader Joe's just almost uniformly seem to love it. They're just happy there. You know, it's something to do with hiring or the culture or I don't know what it is. And some of them work full-time, but some work part-time. So I consider that, you know, because it's not really a career job working as a checker. I could see that burns you out after a year or three or five or whatever. It's not forever. So there's reasonable turnover. But if you're personable and, you know, reasonably hard worker, I don't see them killing themselves. I see them working. But it's not frenetic working. They're working slow and steady. And, you know, and they have various jobs. You know, I go and I like the free samples. So there's somebody there giving the samples. Yes, there are people stocking shelves. There are people who are, you know, certainly checkout people. So the work, and the same person does all those tasks. So they're not stuck with one thing. And they seem to be happy with the pay and certainly just overall happy. That's a pretty darn good side hustle working at Trader Joe's. Another one is tutoring. Now, do we normally think of tutoring as, you know, tutoring kids in elementary school who are having trouble learning to read or in math or whatever? But, you know, whether you're talking about beginning readers all the way to, and here's kind of the under-the-radar idea, there are many people who reach the final stage before getting their degree, and they need to do a final project, whether it be a PhD thesis or a senior project or a master's paper or whatever it is, and it's hard for them. It's a great opportunity to try to be a coach to somebody to help them. I'm not asking you to, I don't want you to help, to write them, but helping to guide them. Because very often they're afraid to admit their insecurity about that for fear, you know, to their professors, for fear that the professor is going to then ding them for it. So there's room for these tutors, these dissertation or thesis or senior project coaches to help plan the paper or the project or the thesis, to help them with structuring what it would look like, to edit it, but again, within the bounds of what is ethical, not rewriting, but reasonable editing. And that's a very rewarding kind of work, because here in the Bay Area, we have so many people who have degrees and advanced degrees who are not particularly using them. And to be able to coach somebody who is struggling with their master's thesis, and it's very high stakes for them because that's all that's standing between them, between them and their degree. So anyway, I've got more of these, but I want to prioritize you. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi, I'm Kim, second-time caller.
Hi, Kim. What's on your mind?
It's great to hear tonight's show because just today I had a conversation with some people about verbosity and how to give feedback in a way that's constructive because we have an issue on our team where great team, but there's a person mm-hmm. who has a repetitive need mm-hmm. to have everyone else on the team engage in that person's, the thing they're contributing to mm-hmm. the overall delivery.
Okay.
So instead of being a self-directed contributor, she takes the time and energy of other very high-performing necessary parts of the puzzle. And we've done some pretty good coaching and cheat sheeting and all this stuff, but it continues to be an issue.
Okay. What's place rank?
And what do I do?
Okay, great. The perfect call. If you're place shrink with her, is her motivation to show off? Is it she's insecure?
She doesn't know. She doesn't understand the medium. And no amount of 101, here's the basics, sinks in.
Okay. Can you give me a little more? We have just a little time, but can you give me a little more specifics about what the work she's doing and where she's inveigling herself into others so I can give a more concrete example of what I would do?
Instead of being able to take a exercise where go do this thing, mm-hmm. go create this part.
Right.
She, and everybody agrees, everybody's going to go get their part and come back.
Okay.
She goes away and then takes time away from the others that they need to make their parts because she can't do it on her own because she's just not getting it.
Oh, so it's a skill gap. So it's a skill gap. She doesn't have the ability to do it on her own. Okay, great.
Well,
so,
I don't know if she doesn't have the ability or...
Whatever. There's two choices only. There is a reasonable amount of, you know, sitting down with her one time on this kind of project and really line by line, moment by moment, spending a half hour both planning out the work and then watching her and giving her in-the-moment feedback. After a relatively small amount of that, you have to decide whether she's making enough progress you want to keep her or tactfully, without putting her on necessarily up for performance improvement plan, counseling and say, you know, maybe this is not the right job for you. You have strengths in X, Y, and Z. I'll help you find a better job. So if I said, really, the only answer is some very intense short-term one-on-one coaching with her. And if you're not seeing adequate progress, gently trying to counsel her into a position that's more appropriate or change her job description in the current work to better suit her strengths. Does that make sense?
It's an absolute bingo.
There we go. Thank you very much.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Thursday at 7. At 7 p.m., of course. You can call in for a workover. Plus, I'll talk with Scott Wheeler of Urban Arborist about what it's really like to be an arborist, a guy who spends his time in trees. Yeah, some people do actually do make money. Many think that money grows on trees. Anyway, until then, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.